So the church in its wisdom, every liturgy sends us on a journey. Every week it's prepared certain readings specifically for that day, and every week is different. And there's a purpose for every single reading that it's chosen in its wisdom. If we listen carefully, usually we find a common theme that the church wants us to teach that day. If we listen to the Pauline, the Catholicon, the Acts, they all talk about certain things, and usually there's a common theme that culminates in the psalm and then finally the gospel of that day. Today we read about, in the Pauline, we read about St. Paul saying to watch and stand fast in faith, to be brave and be strong, and let everything that we do be done in love. In the Catholicon, in the book of James, chapter 4, verse 7, he says, therefore submit to God, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. And he continues to say to humble ourselves in God's sight and not to speak evil of one another. And finally in the Acts, St. Peter is basically talking about how the brethren should accept St. Paul and St. Barnabas, even though they were preaching to Gentiles, to talk about the miracles that God allowed to happen. So it's essentially another ministry of love. And finally, the summary in Psalms, it actually says in the psalm before the gospel today, it says, but you are my strong refuge. Let my mouth be filled with your praise and your glory all the day. In the gospel today, it talks about a miracle that Christ did. In fact, many miracles. If we read a little bit before the actual verse, so earlier on in the chapter, Jesus and his disciples were in the grain fields on a Sabbath day. And they started plucking heads of grain to eat. And when the Pharisees saw this, they looked at the disciples and said, what you're doing isn't lawful. What you're doing is completely wrong and it's against the law. Then Jesus went with the disciples to the synagogue. And so there was a man that came to him, he had a withered hand. And Jesus looked at him and asked them, is it lawful to actually heal on the Sabbath? And he went ahead and healed him anyway. And so the Pharisees, instead of turning around and thinking, oh my goodness, this is a great miracle, they get lost in this tunnel vision, which we're all culprits of. And instead of thinking, oh my goodness, how great is this miracle, and allowing this to be an opportunity for them and their hearts to be touched by God, it actually says in verse 14, then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him, how they might destroy him. And then we start the gospel reading for today. And so it finally, Jesus healed many people just before this event. But it's almost like St. Matthew today wanted to summarize it all in this one man who was demon-possessed, blind, and mute. So spiritually, he was essentially a vegetable. He couldn't do anything. He was controlled by the devil and had no thoughts, no control of his sight, no control of anything. And it says, all the multitude were actually amazed that the blind and mute man can both speak and see. And they asked, could this be the Son of Man? From that alone, we kind of feel that the people didn't know who Jesus was yet. And the reason for it is it says that they were amazed. If you have a teacher and a student, if a student gets a really challenging question correct, we get surprised by the student because it's not expected of him to be able to do that. Whereas if the teacher himself who teaches that course is able to answer those questions, it's a nothing because obviously, that he teaches it. So when Jesus does a miracle, anything that he does is beneath his ability. It's not the most thing that he can do. God is completely powerful and completely amazing in everything that he does. But the fact that the people were amazed shows to us that they didn't know that it was Christ. They didn't know that he is the Son of God. And the proof of that is it says, could this be the Son of David? If they'd known that it was, that this man was Christ, was the Christ, the Messiah, they would say something like, this is the Son of God, not the Son of David. And so Jesus, in his absolute amazing ability to deal with the Pharisees, it says that, when the Pharisees heard it, they thought amongst themselves, they said, this fellow, he casts out demons except by Beelzebub. He's not, it's not of his own power. He's a demon. And normally in life, and what society teaches us is if someone accuses us of something that we haven't done, the first instinct, the reflex is to retaliate and defend ourselves. And if we can accuse them and bring our accusers down in the process, then all the better for us. But Jesus, in his amazing mercy and love, it says he knew their thoughts. So it didn't say he heard their words. So he knew their thoughts and what they were thinking. And instead starts talking about how their rationale is completely flawed. But it's amazing because they knew that they didn't necessarily say this directly in Christ's ear. But the fact that Jesus answered their question nonetheless, he actually completely ignores their attack on him. Completely puts that on the side and thinks big picture. What would he achieve if he starts retaliating and telling them off? Not as much as if he just by answering a question that they didn't utter or they hadn't spoken in his presence. That in itself is a miracle. And that in itself should, in theory, be able to show them that this is Christ. This is not just a mere man. And that in itself should hopefully touch their hearts. But unfortunately, it didn't. And it actually made it worse. We can learn a lot from Christ and his actions and everything that he does. And ultimately, thinking big picture is really the thing that we should all aspire to do the most. A lot of times we try to defend ourselves and try to make ourselves look good in front of others and whatnot. It's funny, I came across a mother with her two sons, and her sons were quite young. They're like maybe, I don't know, 7 and 12 or something. And so they were sitting there doing nothing, like just sitting on three seats next to each other. And out of nowhere, the older son says, my shoulder, Mum, it really hurts. And everyone's looking at him thinking, what's going on? And so his mum said, what's wrong with it? And he points at his younger brother and he says, 3 hours ago, he pinched me. It was quite funny because then obviously that started a fight and they started annoying each other and arguing and whatnot. And it's quite funny because in life we do that quite a lot. We sit there and try to bring others around us down. And obviously it was for some other reason, which I'm sure he would have hurt him at some stage. But the church teaches us the complete opposite. The church teaches us that we should actually defend others and actually cover their mistakes. I mean, I think it was St. Macarius the Great, but there was a story where a couple of monks went up to St. Macarius and they were complaining that another monk had a woman sneaking into his cell. And so they were saying, you know, how could this be? So St. Macarius said, okay, we'll go and we'll see what's going on. So he walked in first and seeing, I think it must have been somewhere where, you know, some box or something with a lid on it, knowing that the woman would probably have been, you know, it was hiding underneath there, he sat on this lid and said to the other monks, go inside and search this monk's cell. And he let them search, and out of respect, the monks wouldn't have said to St. Macarius to move or get off the lid that he was covering. And so when they couldn't find anyone, St. Macarius actually told them off in the presence of this monk that was being accused. And they all walked away, and he actually asked this monk to pray for him and remember him in his prayers. That achieved multiple things. First of all, it showed out of mercy and love how this monk wasn't being completely reviled and rebuked by his elder. The younger monks, St. Macarius taught them not to be so judgmental and to think about their own sins. I saw something similar recently. I saw Abuna Augustinos, and he was having this conversation with a young boy. For argument's sake, we'll call him Mina. And he was saying to Mina, you can't run around in the altar, in the haircut, with your shoes on. And Mina turned around and said, yes, I can. And he said, no, you can't. And so Mina's turned around and said to Abuna, look, my shoes, I've got them on and I'm running around. And it was like, it was a very laughable kind of quirky conversation, which I thought, how amazing is Abuna's love? Like he could have, you know, if he had this tunnel vision where it was, you know, all about laws and all about rules, he would turn around and say, "Fen abuku omak," you know, we'll go, they didn't teach you anything, this and that. And he didn't. He actually, out of love, showed this boy what the church teachings are and what the rules are. So the points of benefit that I was hoping to kind of talk about is the Lord can see our thoughts. It says that he saw their thoughts first and then reacted based on that. Initially, a lot of our sins, a lot of the big problems that people end up having, they start off as small thoughts. A thought on its own, I mean, Jesus could have turned around and said, you know what, it's just a thought. They haven't said anything yet, so what's the point of dealing with it? But he didn't. He addressed it there and then. Because we're told and we're taught that anything that starts off as just a thought can quickly turn into something a lot bigger. And it was true. At the beginning, the Pharisees, they started thinking about it. Then they talked amongst themselves. And then they started acting on these things. And about 2 or 3 years later, they ended up killing and crucifying Jesus in one of the worst ways possible. In medicine, we're taught, that they've got this theory or principle. They say, never let the sun set on pus. And what that means is, essentially, prevention is better than a cure. So if someone's got a little bit of bacteria or a little bit of an infection or anything like that, it's best to deal with it as soon as absolutely possible. Because if you don't, the risks can be quite severe. It can actually grow. It can get worse. An infection can start. It can spread. And it can cause quite debilitating effects. So in our lives, the question is, are there any areas in our lives that are demon-possessed? You know, are there? And what that means is, do we have any weaknesses in our lives or things that we can't stop or we can't say no to or we can't resist? A temptation that no matter what we're doing, wherever we are, we can't resist. And those areas or those weaknesses in our lives are essentially areas where God can't enter. You know, do we have any of those things in our lives? An area that God cannot enter because the devil's taking complete ownership of it. Today there was a man who lost all his reasoning. He was blind, he was mute, he had no control and was completely possessed by this devil and by this demon. Jesus cast out this demon, and as soon as he did, the man was able to see and he was able to talk and he was able to think and praise God. Maybe initially the things those thoughts that we have initially they're not so bad or they don't look too bad. But in the end, they can have quite debilitating effects on us. As God's children, we're supposed to be completely and totally owned by God. When Abuna baptizes us in the holy water, he immerses our entire body. He doesn't leave parts of it hanging out of the water. Because ideally, as Christians, whether we like it or not, our responsibility is to make sure that we're completely owned by God. Everything we do must be totally God's. And if it doesn't happen, then maybe the devil has some either total or partial ownership of us. St. Paul says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be enslaved by the power of any. Many people, you know, there are hundreds of addictions out there. Hundreds of sins that we can fall into that can affect our lives, that we can be enslaved to. There's many, many of them. For example, things like food. You know, I'm a culprit of that. You know, how many of us become hangry if we don't eat, before a certain time? And so the church teaches us, and it provides us with fasting. It provides us with principles that we can do to overcome these addictions or overcome these demons. You know, coffee addicts. I won't say too much about that because I'm still working on that one myself. But, you know, essentially, you know, the alcohol, you know, sexual addictions, pornography, habits, TV. You know, once back in Queensland when we were serving over there, we were visiting a family and we were visiting this boy. His parents were glued to the TV while we were in our visitation. And every so often they'll turn around and say, tell him to study or tell him to do whatever. Like, it's just a lot of times we get, essentially, we develop these habits that possess us that we don't realize at the beginning. There's nothing wrong with television. There's nothing wrong with video games. There's nothing wrong with music. But so many times we find ourselves initially starting something and then it can actually take a hold of us without us even realizing. And the devil is fantastic at doing this. And there's many other, the list goes on, shopping, money, praise, people, you know, seeking people's praise, etc. Basically, it's anything that can distract us or direct our lives in a different path. Anything we can't let go of, anything that we don't have the power to say no, is essentially a demon in our lives. So what's the big deal? What's the point? The problem with these habits or these demons is that it's a sin. It's essentially worshipping. You know, addiction is out of God's approval for us. The reason for it is because essentially the devil uses this as a means to an end. The devil isn't just happy with us becoming addicts. The whole idea of it is to use that addiction to finally destroy us. You know, so many people's homes and lives get destroyed because of money, because of addictions to pornography, addictions to alcohol and drugs. They start off small, but then they become things that can actually have a lot of power over us. St. Peter says, be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. It's a very vivid imagery, a roaring lion, not a timid little, you know, pussycat, not a little kitten, not a little puppy, a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Whether we like it or not, there is a devil out there, there is a heaven, there is a hell, there is a purpose. Most recently, we saw, the church took us out on an outing where we saw a play for the Screwtape Letters. It was actually quite beautiful, but the theory and the principle is quite amazing, getting into the mind of you know, the unknown worlds, or the unseen worlds rather. And it's true, there is a purpose for the devil to actively search for us and find our weakness and use it to our to his advantage. So I'll just finish off by just going over a few little things that we can do about it. And little things that we should ideally think about when we're assessing our own lives, and I say this to myself more than anyone else, but it's more looking for patterns and being watchful for patterns in our lives. You know, no alcohol addict ever started drinking with the intent to become an addict or to think, I want to destroy my life. No one ever started smoking thinking, I want to become a smoking addict. No one ever put money down on a gambling table thinking, I'm going to, you know, put my whole life savings on the line and destroy my family in the process. So let's look at things that we do in our own lives where there's certain patterns. There's such things, obviously, as good habits and habits that are bad. But more importantly, if we do see those things, if we find that there's anything that we can't live without, or something that we do, however big or small it might be, to just be vigilant of it and be mindful of it. I had a friend in Queensland who actually said to me once, you know, we were sitting down together and I said, oh, do you want a coffee? And he said, no, I don't drink that anymore. I thought that was, oh my goodness, what are you doing? And he said, the reason for it is I found myself not being able to focus or concentrate or do anything. My body was becoming very, very dependent on it. And I know that's not what God has in plan for me. Now, he was at a level that I'm yet to achieve, but it's interesting that his philosophy and principle, and it's great that he was thinking in that way. Other things are obviously whatever problems we may be having, whatever demons that we find ourselves falling under the temptation of, it's always good to have accountability. It's very difficult to fight these things on our own. And so having the church provides us with the beautiful blessing of having priests, of having confession fathers, of servants, of a good community that we can talk to about these things. And finally, remembering that despite whatever our efforts are, despite whatever our fallings are, it's always good if we can think as much as possible to use whatever experiences that God's given us in our lives and use it for God's glory. In the book of Lamentations, it says, who is he who speaks it and it comes to pass when the Lord hasn't commanded it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that both woe and well-being proceed? Everything that happens in our life happens for a reason. And God is in complete control of that. Whether we fall, that's okay. It was said, you know, the difference between us and the saints is that we all fall. But when we fall, the saints actually get up straight away. They confess straight away. They run to their confession father. They run to God and ask for forgiveness. So even if we fall, who knows? Maybe God's put you under this temptation so that you can actually, once you've come out of it, through the help of the priest, through the help of the church, through God's grace and prayer and fasting, you may be a source of joy and a source of happiness to other people who are currently or who are later on stumbling in the same thing you did. They always say the best person to help an addict is an ex-addict. So today, and I mean, when God gives you victory, use it to help others. Don't keep it to yourself. Spread that joy and spread that love. Because those who know to do good and don't do it, to them it is a sin. Today is a sermon of hope. God gives us a new start, a fresh beginning. He's telling us that he's on our side. Although we're weak, although we're sinful, although we might be blind, deaf, and mute, whether spiritually or physically, we have the blessings of having the creator of heaven and earth, of also being the same person that we get to call dad, that we get to call our father, and he is capable of everything. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is in Romans chapter 8, verse 31, where St. Paul says, "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us?" If God is for me, how can I go wrong? In theory, Christians ideally should never stress. We should never be upset people. And I know it's easier said than done. But if we've got God on our side, what stressful thing in this world where everything is going to pass away? And you know, earlier on in the readings in the liturgy, we read saying that our life is but a vapor that's going to be passing away. So if God is for us and he's on our side and he's always there watching for us and he's everything that happens in our life is for a reason and that he's approved, then what is the worst that can possibly happen to us? Whatever that may be, in whatever situation that may be, God's already approved it. He's already said that's okay. And we know that he only has the best intentions for us. If we keep this at our forefront in our minds, it will dictate all the decisions that we make in our life. It will dictate how we feel, how we react to things, and how we deal with people around us. If we constantly think, no matter what happens in our life, God is for us and he's right there, who can be against us and what's the worst that can ever happen? We pray that God hopefully blesses us all and helps us keeping these things in our minds. And glory be to God forevermore.